Computer, initialize holosuite.
Good evening, and welcome to another episode of The Fire Caves, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Perry.
And I'm your host, David. Tonight we're talking about Season 1, Episode 19, In the Hands of the Prophets. Before we continue, you can find us on Twitter, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, as The Fire Caves, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast.
Absolutely, and you should find us on there, because we do have a lot of fun with other Trek fans and shows through our Twitter especially, so you'd enjoy that. A lot of hijinks we get up to on my random off days or just when I'm bored at work. So tune in to our Twitter especially, and again, if you have any other questions or anything like that, mainly direct those to Facebook because you can write more there. All right?
Yeah.
Also, before we continue, just want to let everybody know that this episode and last week's episode, if you might have noticed, was the first time that David and I are recording together. So we are in the same location versus doing sound files and all the other stuff over the internet. So please forgive any weird sounds you may hear because we're not in sound studios. We're at my apartment. So there we go.
I have to look into Perry's deep penetrating eyes and talk to him in person as opposed to pretending to look away over Zoom. So,
and as I've been told many times before, you can get lost in these delicious brown pools I've got. So... yeah, but anyway, we're not going to talk about the loveliness of my eyes anymore. We will just simply talk about this episode, which is the final episode in the first season of our much beloved Star Trek Deep Space Nine. So, without further ado, David, do you want to give us a recap?
Let's do it. All right, so we are on Deep Space Nine, and we are with Keiko and Chief O'Brien. They are getting some...
Jum Jaws.
There we go. Yeah, I couldn't think of
the
word.
From the sap of the Jum Jaw tree.
Yeah, they're sweet. You know, O'Brien is saying, I know it's a natural sweetness. Keiko's like, it's too sweet for her taste, but hey, he likes it. He starts talking to her about one of his assistants. There's a Bajoran woman that is one of his assistants, and he tells her that, you know, hey, this new assistant is actually pretty good. And Keiko gives a little hard time. Briefly insinuates that maybe there's something more going on there with him and his assistant.
Neela.
Yep. But Keiko is just giving him a hard time, and she goes off to her school. We see her teaching, and she starts talking about the wormhole, and she's telling the students all of the scientific information surrounding the wormhole, giving us a very, you know, realistic explanation of why the wormhole is, why it's important. You know, it's a stable wormhole. But as she's talking, a woman comes into the classroom, and she seems to have a religious garb on.
Right, ceremonial garb.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And as Keiko says that part of the reason the wormhole is important is because it's artificial, this woman interrupts and says, well, that's because the prophets are in charge of the wormhole, and they protect us, and they allow ships to pass through safely. It's the celestial temple for the prophets. And Keiko... trying to be just a, you know,
just a facts man, scientist.
Yep. No Joran religious culture necessarily or religious teaching from her end. She's just giving the facts. She politely declines to say anything about the religious aspects of the wormhole, other than saying that I respect your beliefs, but you know, this is the scientific understanding of the wormhole. This woman, whose name I'm forgetting at the moment, Perry.
Vedic Wynn.
There we go. She is here on the station, and she is one of the new candidates to be the Kai.
Yes.
Right. And so she has started talking with the parents, the Bajoran parents in particular, about how Keiko's teaching is going against the religious teachings of the Bajorans, and therefore that could create, for the Bajorans, a spiritual crisis, that they might be being led astray by Keiko, and ultimately the Federation. So Sisko wants to come to a peaceful resolution. He wants to find, you know, a way for the Federation and for the Bajoran tries to get along, to understand each other. And so he tries getting Kira involved. And Kira's like, hey, I'm a Bajoran. I'm on her
Vita side. Quinn's
side,
Vita yeah.
Quinn's side.
Kira sides with Vita Quinn.
Exactly. She says that there may be no way for them to really bring this whole problem to a nice, easy conclusion. It might be that they have to have Keiko teach her own school and the Bajorans have their own school with the religious aspects being taught there. So Sisko decides to go down to the Bajor and he meets another one of the
Vedic Barayo.
That's it. He is a candidate that is more popular, but he is unwilling to directly help Sisko. He says that the other Vedics, a lot of words here that I'm not exactly immediately familiar with.
We will go through the nomenclature later.
The other Vedics are not willing to have Sisko try and, you know, basically mediate some sort of compromise. They're either afraid of him and what he might do. They might be afraid because he's also the emissary, which was, you might remember, the title of the pilot episode. So mm-hmm. He himself has religious significance among the Bajorans. And so he says, look, I can't help you right now. And Sisko is a little frustrated by that. He says, not only do the prophets teach religion, but they also teach politics, don't mm-hmm. they? And the guy kind of smiles and says, yeah, effectively. So Sisko has to go back. Now, meanwhile, we have a little mystery going on. One of the Federation mechanics has disappeared. The log he last put in said he was going to one part of the station. But one of the things that kind of tips O'Brien off of something being wrong is that one of his tools was taken from his toolbox. And that does not happen. No one takes a man's tools. Especially the chief's tools.
No one takes a chief engineer's tools, not a Starfleet officer.
That's
anyway.
Right. So O'Brien, in this conversation they have on ops, he says, like, I'm not insinuating something happened. I'm just saying there's something a little fishy about this. And so Odo is kind of put in charge of figuring out what happened. With Bashir's help, first off, they do find the remains of this tool. It's in a plasma conduit. Mm-hmm. And the plasma conduit has melted the tool, and they find human remains around the melted remains of the tool. And Bashir ultimately determines that it was the missing
ensign
that was his body, or at least his DNA was there. And he's able to determine that he was actually killed by a
phaser blast
mm-hmm. set to kill. And that's actually what killed him, not that conduit turned on and he died while trying to do some sort of midnight fix. So that tips them off that he was murdered, and they need to figure out why and who. And then they determine later on that the person who seemed to be making these changes made changes not in the area where the body was found, because that must have triggered the person to make a change to their plan. And they realize it's another part of the station that a subroutine has been changed.
Right.
And it's actually the same location where Neela was helping O'Brien at the beginning of the episode. We see that actually Neela is actually in some sort of cahoots with, again, Vedic
Wynn.
Wynn, there we go. And when the other Vedic
Barayo
comes to the station, he thinks that Sisko has invited him. Sisko plays along. He's like, oh, yeah, definitely come on board. But Sisko's like, I didn't invite.
Well, I always felt like that was less Sisko. He thought Sisko had invited him,
right.
But he was more using that as a cover as to why he suddenly appeared out of nowhere, coming to the station.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
One of those
wink,
nudge, wudge. You invited me. Remember? Yeah, you did. That's right. Come take a tour.
I thought it was Wynn that it falsified his invitation.
I could see how you would think that, but if you think back to the conversation that Sisko and Barayo had in the Arboretum. Barayo is telling him how he can't really be his friend right now,
right.
And Sisko accuses him of playing politics,
right.
And so then this is his kind of way of being like, damn the politics, this is a tumultuous situation, let me go be the voice of reason, but I still need to maintain some separation, so I'm not coming there to throw my support behind Sisko and his issue,
right.
I'm coming there as a friend of Bajor and Bajoran
right.
citizens, and I've never seen this place where they live, so give me a tour, buddy.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, that
okay.
kind of thing.
I still think my way's right, but whatever.
Okay.
But anyway, the reason he's coming to the station is because Keiko's school is bombed. Massive
yes.
explosion occurs, destroys the school, and seeing as how there were only 5 students left in Keiko's class after all the Bajorans had left, this puts her in a very dangerous position. O'Brien is initially distraught that she's been killed, but she wasn't. No one was in there. No one was killed. But when,
Vedic Bariah?
Vedic Bariah, when he comes, he meets with Vedic
Wynn
and says, look, we're here. We need to make peace. We need to find a way to, like, work together. He gives this nice speech, and it puts Wynn in this awkward position. But, again, we can see that she kind of nods at Neela and said, and you can see that Neela has been tasked to do something. Mm-hmm. This girl, who in the previous episode had been all sweet and nice and lovely, is suddenly looking very serious, and we can tell that there's something going on, and that she seems to be involved with all the nefarious things going on with the dead mechanic and all that. So anyway, in the end, while Sisko is trying to reason with Wynn, he says, look, I've been here for 7 months. The Bajorans here know me. They know the Federation. They know that we're here not as, you know, evil or as the devil. We're not here to hurt anybody. He says that at the bombing. So he tries to, you know, relate to Wynn, and she says, like, she turns on him. So previously she had been all nice to him, and she says, no, you're evil, you're the devil, you're trying to turn the Bajorans against the religion. So when Wynn and the other guy, whose name I can't remember.
Bariah.
When Bariah is there giving his speech, Neela pulls out a blaster and tries to assassinate him. Sisko sees that she's about to do it right before it happens, and so he's able to tackle her to the ground, and she screams that, you know, the prophets told her to do it, and she was serving the prophets. Wynn is unable to be identified as the one who told her to do that, because Neela won't confess to the co-conspirators. So we're left with Sisko and Kira talking about their relationship and how they've grown closer together, and how they've had to work together through some things, but they do trust each other. And I think that's pretty much
That's essentially it. We see that, you know, like you said, you know, they can't really point the finger at Wynn, but we all know that it was Wynn.
Right.
You know, so this kind of sets her up as another antagonist on their list.
Yeah.
That's pretty succinct. And again, if there's anything that was missed, you can go and watch it. It's the show's 29 years old, so you have plenty of time. You have no excuse.
Right.
You have no excuse. You should go watch it. If you're a fan of Star Trek and you haven't seen it, you should go watch it.
Yeah.
Great episode, great season ender. Way to give us, like, the story ends for this episode, sure, but there's now so much more of the world that we're now in that we now have to contend with in some way, you know?
And
seeing this was the, you know, Star Trek's first real attempt at handling the mixture of religion and science and politics on this bigger scale. You know, the other Star Trek shows, you know, Next Generation, the original series, there were some moments where they tried it a little bit, but it was tiptoeing, especially compared to what we see here with Deep Space Nine. They jumped in.
Right.
Now, wherever you fall on your religious spectrum, you know, you might not agree, but I mean, at least you can definitely say an attempt was made. Whether this was clumsy or not,
that's going to be the debate.
But yeah, they definitely really went for it for the first time here. So I was giving props for that, because I mean, like I said, you know, trying to find a way to get religion into such a science-driven show, where that seems, where religion seems to kind of take a backseat to a lot of science fiction.
Right.
Very hard to do. I like that.
Yeah. No, this episode definitely doesn't pull its punches in terms of, like, it's taking on some topics that are controversial in its own right. And before we talk more about that, I just want to say that, like you just said, this is a great season finale of season one, especially tying back to the pilot and the emissary episode.
Yeah.
This is the first time I can remember that Sisko has been called the emissary since then. So it's been a whole season since that episode has really been brought up in such a way. Sisko actually did meet the prophets in that first episode, so he actually has some knowledge of what happened. And his son Jake actually brings it up when they're discussing it. And Jake's like, why is she being so, you know, strange? Why is she so, you know, uptight about her religious beliefs? And Sisko actually makes the case, like, hey, your interpretation of events is going to be very important to how you relate to other people and how you understand them. And so what you think you know might be different than what someone else knows, and that can cause conflict, even if you're both describing the same events. So, yeah.
And that's like a really great scene for me, too, to watch. You know, I'm always going to be a very big fan of the father-son dynamic that we see here. But beyond that, it's also, you know, goes back to something that we've talked about a few times during our run of this season, which is that emerging multiculturalism, which, again, we were seeing a lot of in the early 90s as well.
Right.
Here's, again, Star Trek trying to mirror that.
Right.
And Sisko was telling his son, you know, like, cause, you know, he, you know, when we see Jake come to Ben in Ops,
right,
you know, he talks about how Keiko had changed their lesson plan.
Right.
And told them all about Galileo and being persecuted by the church for saying that the earth revolved around the sun. And he was like, that's just so dumb.
Right.
And you know, Sisko tells him right away, it's easy to
look back
400 years and judge that history when, you know, when people were living it,
right,
a whole different context.
Right.
And then he, you know, he kind of chastised Jake a little bit because Jake's like, well, you know, they're not prophets. They're wormhole aliens that you found. That's
right.
So stupid. He's like, it's not stupid. You know, and
he even says, and I like this about what Sisko says, he says the prophets actually are beings that don't see in time like we do. They can see in the past and in the future, so to a certain extent.
They are prophets.
They are prophets.
Right.
They can't see into the future in that. Let me put it this way. There is it would be easy to dismiss the prophets as, yeah, they're just aliens.
Just another group of aliens,
and
right.
And so Sisko reminds us that that is part of who they are in that first episode. Because I do think that, you know, the Bajoran religion is, in some ways, got some problems, because they are, the prophets are not, like, a godlike being or beings that explain, like, the creation of the universe, for example. But if the Bajorans were using them, as the episode explains, like, for a way to find hope via the Cardassian invasion and occupation, they served that purpose, certainly at the time. So now we're moving on to a new phase of what does the Bajoran religion mean now that we're no longer using them for that purpose?
So two things, but to finish the first one, the first point being Jake and Ben's conversation, it basically ends with Ben telling his son that, you know, you need to basically maintain an open mind and not judge a culture based upon their, you know, belief system per se. You know, it's not like the Bajorans are necessarily asking you to fully adopt their religion, but you should still have some respect for it. And he even tells them, you know, if you don't, you run the risk of becoming just like Vedic Wind, only from the other side.
Yeah,
and again, that goes back to, again, that the diminishing of imperialism and the embracing of multiculturalism here, because it's, again, just having respect for other cultures and their viewpoints. It's not saying that you have to embrace their lifestyle, but it is saying that general respect for that person sitting across from you.
Right.
And he tells the son, like, that's what Starfleet is about. We're not here to make anybody necessarily like us, and we're not trying to be like anyone else either. But there is a baseline where we can respect each other and we can work together.
Right.
And so that's what he's trying to get with with the Bajorans, and also trying to, you know, teach his son as he's, you know, growing up in this world and watching his father deal with this situation.
Right.
And now the other thing about the Bajoran religion. So, like, so far, this is the first season. We haven't seen much about it.
Right.
And yes, you know, Sisko makes a great point there, too. He says, you know, for 50 years, the Cardassians were brutalizing the Bajoran people in their planet.
Right.
The only thing they had to hold on to was their faith and how the prophets were, like, you know, the central focal point of that faith. But we also know that the Bajorans have been influenced by the prophets for centuries. And we found that out from the very first episode when Kaiopaka gives the first orb to Sisko.
Right.
And she tells him there were 9 other ones, and they had appeared throughout the various centuries of their existence.
Right.
You know, the prophets have sent these things to them,
right,
and they each have different meanings, each different things, you know, and then, you know, the Cardassians came and took them,
right,
and, you know, so that's kind of how he gets started on finding them in the first place.
Right.
So we know that the prophets have influenced Bajor for a while. How long, we don't really know the definitive timeline, but we do know that there is a cultural reference, a focal point of this, of these aliens interfering with them. And as Sisko pointed out, they, to them, time is irrelevant. The past and the future and the present, they all mixed together, you know. So with that ability and their ability to influence people, because clearly they've influenced Cisco and several others.
Right.
I mean, he makes a very good argument. Who's to say that they aren't? Like, why wouldn't we look at them as gods? Like, kind of like with Q. I mean, we know him as he's a general malcontent, sure. But, I mean, he can literally snap his fingers and anything he wants,
right.
he gets, you know. Yeah. And anything he wants to do to a person, he can. Right. So, again, for all intents and purposes, he is a god. You know, right. Now, if you want to look at him that way or not,
right?
But seriously, how else would you define a god who, I mean, he rolls around all the time telling you of his omnipotence. So right. that's one of the main qualifiers that we've always used anyway. So again, Star Trek attempting to explain something that is on a lot of ways a whole other level. Again, whether you agree with where they fall on the attempt as this was great versus this was terrible, I think it's going to be the end-all debate forever. But, like I said, at least they make the attempt, and at least here we see it with Deep Space Nine anyway, they really went for it. They really yes. just kind of laid it out. We get
right.
from just the leaders all the way up to religious zealotry with the bombings and
yeah.
all the rest of it. I mean, they just kind of tried to hit the whole spectrum in yes. this 42 minutes of an episode.
Yeah. Yeah, and I would have to say, like, this is probably the boldest and bravest and most, I guess brave is just the best word to put. You know, like Next Generation didn't do this quite this way. I mean, they had religious elements at certain times on their episodes, yeah. but they never, there was the one episode where they, Picard, using his archaeology skills, determines that, he finds out that all of the races in the galaxy were kind of exceeded by one race millennia ago, mm-hmm. like so long ago, but basically all of the various
humanoid species are all branches of the same tree.
Exactly, exactly. And so you can go, well, that's not exactly how things are said in the Bible, but the other is okay, just science fiction. This one is more direct, and it's like Galileo. We're talking about historical yeah. events. We're talking about, hey, like, there's some things in the past that we dealt with that are something that, you know, are problematic, and then that we're addressing that directly in the episode with the Bajoran culture. So, for example, I'll just put it this way. Like, when Wynn shows up to the school
mm-hmm.
and says, like, you're not teaching the religious element of this, you know, the wormhole, there are multiple things that we could compare that to. Creationism, yeah. evolution, and so you can see how that immediately ties into our own culture, yeah. our own story, and how, you know, Keiko is like, hey, I'm the one in charge of teaching here. Like, you can't come in and demand what I teach. I'm going to teach what I teach, and I'm going to do a good job of it. She even says, like, it's your job to teach the religious element, like, in your own space. Like, you know, I guess we don't call it church, but, you know, basically, like, whenever you guys have your religious services, you guys learn the religious element of this, what's going on. That's not my job. So there's a lot of parallels we can make yeah. To our own immediate.
Yeah, and I was going to say, that's probably, you know, probably the true core of this story is definitely that. It's an age-old tale for us, you know, of the education versus religion, and is there ever a possibility of a middle ground, you know?
Right.
And, you know, with Jake bringing up that lesson of Galileo, you know, and we all know, you know, just from our own study of history, just how important the Catholic Church was for a very long time in human development, in human society. And for a person of his stature to, you know, say something as controversial as, yeah, the sun doesn't revolve around the earth, it's the other way around. And, I mean, yeah, he was excommunicated, for Pete's sake. And we of course, we look back now, and we've got ample technology that's proven again and again and again that the sun does not revolve around the earth. And we've just collectively accepted that.
Right.
That's fact, you know. And it doesn't, as far as I can tell anyway, it's not breaking anyone's religious coda to believe that, you know, the earth goes around the sun. But try to imagine 400 years ago.
Yeah.
When there was none of that, and you just had your absolute faith in this individual standing up there telling you this,
right.
and then here comes this other person to say, nope, you're wrong, right? Yeah. I mean, just the chaos that would have caused, especially as more and more people began to believe it,
yeah.
you know, and then trying to find a way to have some kind of middle ground
yeah.
on that. Like, I don't think that's ever, like, I can't remember myself that ever being covered in school. Like, how did they eventually get to a point of some kind of melding of the two ideas?
Yeah, eventually it was just accepted knowledge. Yeah, Galileo's theories proved to be correct, and no one could refute them otherwise. So it just became, this is the truth.
Right.
I mean, I would say in that case in particular, it's like, biblical teachings don't say anything to the effect of the earth is the center of the universe and the sun revolves around it. Therefore, when Galileo was being persecuted for his, not his beliefs, but for his science, it wasn't something that they actually needed to persecute him for on a religious ground, because there was nothing that directly contradicted his findings. So that's what's interesting about, like, that story. It's like, you know, Galileo was just doing some math and figured out some math things, and then some people were like, well, your math contradicts what we think is going on, and then they took that too far. And that's kind of what's going on, you could kind of say, this episode. Like,
yeah.
There's nothing wrong about the wormhole being technically explained by Keiko. Keiko has all the scientific knowledge that says exactly why this does that. And when she says, like, it's an artificially constructed wormhole, she's not saying that the prophets weren't the ones who did it. In fact, she does say that they're the ones who did
it.
She's just not giving it the colorization of the religious elements that the Bajorans would give it.
Exactly. So, she does not use any of the religious language or the context. She just lays it out.
I'm glad you say that, because one of the great lines that Wynn has, I think it's Keiko who says, I don't use that terminology, and I don't remember how Wynn responds. But basically,
she called it blasphemy.
Well, she says it's blasphemy, but she basically says that Keiko is giving it a very dry scientific explanation. Wynn is trying to get her to say the more religious elements, and Keiko refuses, and that's what the blasphemy is, but Keiko isn't saying anything that's wrong.
And if you listen to the story that is told to the Bajoran people, which we don't have much of that in this episode, but we do get to it later on. And just the way in which, as we come to understand the formation of their religion, again, nothing that Keiko really says is incorrect. It's more like we're hearing the story through the lens of people who did not have scientific knowledge.
Right.
You know, like, again, they called it the Celestial Temple. We call it the wormhole. You know, because but you could say, I mean, both are technically correct. It's just your description is different. You chose different words, but you're saying the same thing.
Right.
She says wormhole aliens, you call them prophets. We're talking about the exact same groups here. They just, you called them something different.
Right.
You know, she said it was artificially created. You said the prophets created it. Well, it's the same thing.
Right.
So yeah, so it becomes less an argument of, in my feeling anyway, at least initially, less an argument about ideology and more about terminology. And it's just like, either one of them could have given ground here, and it would have been okay.
Yeah.
You
well,
know?
I guess that really comes, you saying ideology versus
terminology.
Terminology is like, man, sometimes terminology is the philosophy, it is the theology.
Which is the point that Kira makes when they end up in Sisko's office, when Keiko and Kira are there, and she's telling her, you know, some people would argue that teaching pure science is a philosophy in and of itself.
Right, yes.
Versus, you know, any kind of ideology. So,
that
was one that I had never heard before. I remember when I, you know, the first time I had watched that and heard that, I was like, you know what? Like, because I, for the longest time, had always identified as more of a scientifically inclined individual, you know? And so, to hear, especially on a show that I'm, like, laser focused on, and I've always associated Star Trek with science, you know, and being the inspiration for a lot of real world science, right? You know, even right now, to hear that and to kind of have respect for that opinion, be like, yeah, I mean, I could see how you could think that science is its own philosophy and its own, you know, right? But I'd never heard anybody term it that way before.
Yeah, so. It's a well written episode in that case, too.
Yeah. There's so much that we get from this that really is a launching point.
Right.
For the rest of the show.
Yeah.
So we're going to be seeing elements of this one episode throughout the rest of the run of the show.
Gotcha.
So it's as great as it is, it's also very important.
I have to say I'm glad about that, because I think one of the reasons I think season one has suffered a little bit is because, like, just comparing it to the TNG, when we're going on a spaceship from one adventure to the next, you don't have to tie all the stories together. But because Deep Space Nine is located around one planet and around one culture, in the sense that it's, you know, it's one planet, it's one group, like, is going to lend itself towards storytelling that affects the next story.
Towards serialization.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so when this season hasn't really delved into that as much, I mean, it has. I mean, we saw the episode where the Kai was, you know, ended up dying, and mm-hmm. Kira had to mourn her, but she's not dead, and all that kind of stuff. Like, we have had some of that, but this is the first episode, again, since the pilot, that, like, truly took that episode and moved forward with the story in a direct manner. And I'm excited to have that continue. Yeah.
So, that's probably a great point to stop and do a little bit of Trek history.
Yeah, that's good.
Given some background insights on both this episode and Greater Trek. So, you just talked about how this story lends itself to serialization. That was probably the main aspect of this show and why people thought that it was going to fail. Because we, coming from Next Generation, we were used to what they called the bottle episode. You know, beginning, middle, and end, self-contained. The next episode did not depend at all on what you watched last week, right? Deep Space Nine, like you said, because it was on a space station, they weren't going anywhere, and dealing with the same people the way that it's beyond it just being like the same core group and other people around them kind of shifting.
Right.
We're seeing more and more of the same recurring characters coming back, right? People thought that it wouldn't work, that we couldn't get great stories. And they tried so hard at first to kind of give us more of that bottle episode format, but it wasn't working.
Right.
It just, the structure was already fundamentally different. And so it just wasn't working. So that's one of the reasons why people feel like the ratings for this show suffered when it was originally running.
Right.
But it's also one of the reasons that this show has seen a particular resurgence here really in like the last probably 5-10 years.
Right.
Because with the advent of streaming services like Netflix and Hulu and, you know, this being available on all those platforms, or well, it was available on all those platforms, you got the chance to really sit down. You could watch at your own pace, watch as many episodes as you want.
Right.
And you were able to start making those connections and seeing the characters come up and
watching
the evolution of their character.
Right.
And it's better. It's better than what we were getting from TNG. Now, TNG has a lot of great things. I'm never going to say that it's not a good Star Trek. But if you are looking for, in my opinion anyway, a more adult, a more complex, developed storyline, Deep Space Nine has it in spades. And it's one of the reasons why even Voyager, as good as Voyager is, it's one of the reasons why Voyager will always fall short, because it never truly embraced the serialization that it should have had. Because it is a single ship lost in the Delta Quadrant, and it's all about their journey home.
Right.
And it's like they tried to do this blending of the two, but especially early on, they really just kind of locked into, nope, screw it. This is kind of like the good old days all over again, and we're just going to do bottle episodes. And the show struggled with that.
Right.
And it was, and even to this day, if you go back and you look, and even now, if you look at on the various streaming platforms and everything else, the episodes that seem to get the most rewatches on Voyager or Next Generation are the ones that are multiple ones, you know, part one, part two, you know, that thing, you know.
Right.
So just like, people clearly wanted the more complex storyline, but somewhere up in the higher ups of Paramount and CBS and all the rest, and they're like, nope, you get a two-parter.
Yeah.
That's it.
Well, I'm certainly the budget's easier to manage. It's just a bottle of
I'm sure. But, you know, Deep Space Nine is the only one that just really leaned into it. And as much as they were shouted at for not doing bottle episodes, they never looked back. Well, that's one thing I really commend the writers, the directors, like everybody. Because, like, you're being told over and over again to do bottle episodes, and you're just sitting there going, no, we're not going to do that.
Right.
No. We'll give you some, but no, for the most part, this all is, you know.
I have to say, I do like a show that can manage to blend both. So I'm going to use Person of Interest as my example. I love Person of Interest. It's probably my favorite show. That show, especially early on, is more bottle episode-y. And then by the end, it turns into more of the serialized nature, especially the last season. And some of what they do is they bring back, like, a character or two that they've, like, helped before, and, like, that character assists, like, becomes part of the main cast. My only complaint about that show is I wish they had really dived into the whole idea that, like, all of the bottle episodes, like, the person they help in those episodes moves forward into the serialization aspect. Like, they're pulling all of these, you know, helpers and allies from across the New York, you know, area. And then by the end of the show, they're like, they have this, like, organization, basically, of, like, people who have these, like, I have a particular set of skills.
Right, and they kind of, like, they would be able to tap into them as a big finale, is all the people they helped.
If I ever see that show, if that show ever happens, that'll be my favorite show. Like, Person of Interest, like, giving me a glimpse of it. That's a good point. A serialized show is usually really great. Usually we got a good one. In general, I think, just simply put, a serialized show, and episodes that build on each other, is able to get into deeper storytelling. And so I think as you say, is going to make Deep Space Nine a little more interesting, a little more invested in storytelling.
And there are some writers and directors who, and just overall showrunners, who really kind of cut their teeth on Deep Space Nine doing that. And from that came Battlestar Galactica and also The Expanse.
Right.
The ability to see these, again, serialized stories that build and build upon each episode, you know. If you haven't watched either one of those, Battlestar Galactica and The Expanse, I don't want you to follow me. Like, please don't, because those shows are just, they're fantastic.
Are you telling your fans to go get...
Yes, I am. I'm sorry. I am. You should be watching those shows. They are fantastic. They give you that...
I still need to see The Expanse season 6. It's okay. I'm waiting to get back from his vacation.
It's okay.
Do it.
I actually held off on watching season 6. Like, I watched the very first episode of season 6 when it aired.
Right.
And then I intentionally missed the next 4.
Yeah.
And then I went back and watched it. And I mean, it's just like, you have to.
Oh, is the finale still
no, so there's still more episodes. I'm all caught up, but there's still, I think there's 4 more episodes.
Right.
So,
as of when we're recording this.
Recording, there's 4 more episodes. But,
and my understanding is that the final book in the series also came out recently. So The Expanse is in the middle of, I don't know if this is going to be the last season of The Expanse. I've heard it is supposed to be, but maybe not. But then that show is in the middle of its
I sincerely hope not. I would really love for them to give me just a little bit more. I need that run to go. I will feel satisfied, especially knowing that
movie.
Yeah, right. You know, like as you know, I've heard anyway that the seasons matched up with the book. So season 1 was book 1, season 2 was book 2. Knowing that there are 9 books in the whole run of the story, to me that says you should at least get 2 more seasons, and then do book 9 as a movie. Just blow it out.
Assuming that it lends itself that way.
Right. They should just, that's how I feel like that should end. To Battlestar Galactica, again, Ronald Moore, who was a writer on both Next Generation and Deep Space Nine. Deep Space Nine was more his baby than anything else, you know. He took a lot of that serialization and story building and character development from Deep Space Nine, and he went, just kind of exploded it in Battlestar, and went darker. It's grittier, and it definitely deals more with the people and less about aliens and you know, rambling around in space and wormholes and everything else.
Right.
So, I mean, if you're looking definitely for a story-driven show that is about the characters and how their interactions, and even characters who you saw a lot of in the first season, and then they just seemingly kind of disappear, and then they pop up again in like middle of the second or towards the third, like that show has it, and it's fantastic, and it will spoil you on watching TV. I mean, it certainly did me. Like I couldn't watch TV after a while because nothing was as good, and I will stand by that to this day. That show has been off the air for like 15, 16 years, maybe a little bit longer, and I'm just like, it's still one of the best shows that I've ever seen. So, they get a lot of that from Deep Space Nine, and even Ronald Moore has even said that there were a lot of things that, like, he'd wished that they'd been able to do on Deep Space Nine, but they couldn't because they were bound by Paramount and, you know, the remnants of the Gene Roddenberry Bible, and, you know, Gene Roddenberry had a, even though he had passed by the time the show really got started, his influence was long-reaching in Star Trek.
Is there something in the Roddenberry Bible that was causing some trouble there? Like,
we don't really see that now. That will be in later seasons. So we will circle back to that question.
Put a
pin in it.
There. There you go. Okay. So before we were recording this episode, Perry, you were telling me there was something in particular about this episode that you were wanting to.
Yes.
What is it?
So, okay. So that was kind of to mislead you a little bit, because it's not something. Oh. It's someone.
Oh.
And it is Vedic Wynn.
Yeah.
I hate Vedic Wynn.
So now, I have to admit, I was doing a little bit of research, and the actress who plays her, name
Louise Fletcher.
She, I guess she comes back, because her name is on her, she's back.
She comes back.
Like, makes it on Deep Space Nine a couple more times.
This is a couple more. She's back. She might as well be a main, because she comes back quite a bit.
Gotcha. Right.
Played expertly by Louise Fletcher, who just has her career has been kind of this, playing these characters you just love to hate. She kind of rose to fame and stardom, like, I guess, the role that before this, I think everybody would know her the most from, was she was Nurse Ratched in One Flew Over Cuckoo's Nest.
Is that her?
So, yes.
What?
Yeah. So, yeah. Now, granted, she has done a lot of things. I just don't know her whole career. I just know that is one of the main standouts. She is Nurse Ratched from One Flew Over Cuckoo's Nest with Jack Nicholson from way back in the day.
The headdress she has on really obscures her hair.
Yeah, it does.
I thought I recognized her face, and I still can't remember exactly what it was that I would say I would recognize her from, but like the reason I looked her up is because like, I think I recognize this actress. I just can't say where it is.
Her voice, that sickeningly sweet, sycophantic voice thing that she does.
Right.
Like, her opening line with O'Brien is one of my favorites, because it just makes my blood boil, because he's chastising the group of the Bajorans and the parents and everybody else standing outside the school.
Right.
And, you know, him and Keiko walk up, and he's just like, yeah, my wife doesn't deserve what you're doing to her.
Right.
And her response was, I feel your anger towards me, and I forgive you
for it. Yes. And in that moment...
Oh, man. Yeah, I was like, someone throw a chair.
Yeah.
I just want to hit her so bad.
So Brian had said, I don't need your forgiveness.
Right. Yeah. I wasn't asking for your forgiveness, you know?
Yeah. It was definitely a fantastic antagonist moment.
Yeah.
There are plenty of... And I'm trying to think of a number of other characters that would fall into this pious woman who's actually a total pain. I mean, I guess the Nurse Ratched element makes total sense. It's the exact same character. But I'm thinking of the movie The Mist at the moment. I don't remember the character's name, but there is a woman in that movie who, when all of the things and the horrors are happening in the film The Mist, she, like, goes super religious. She's saying, oh, gosh, we're being punished for all our sins. And basically she goes crazy and convinces everyone else in the store in that film to go kind of nuts. And basically, I think they end up killing somebody eventually. I don't remember the details about this moment. But the religious zealotry as a dangerous element is important. And actually, I think we forgot to mention, you know, it turns out the theory that they, I forget who says it, but someone at the end of the episode says, Wynn must have invited on, what's his name?
Vedic Braya.
There we go. And who says it to her? She says, you invited him on, you planned the bombing.
Kira.
Kira, yeah, that's right.
Kira says it.
Yeah.
You planned this all along. This was your elaborate attempt to draw Vedic Braya out because he was your main rival to become the next guy.
Right.
This is your way of, one, gaining more notoriety and then also eliminating your competition. It was basically the gist of what Kira was saying.
Right.
And this is, again, setting up Vedic Wynn as a bit more of an adversary here.
Right.
She's not just some religious zealot. She obviously has ambitions here for power.
Right.
And this is going to play into other things that we see later on. And, I mean, we've kind of been leading up to some of this, too, because, like you said, you know, we met Kaio Paka, who was so influential for her very brief stint on the show.
Right.
And then with her dying, there is a void there, because we now need a Kai. We now need a new spiritual leader. And this also introduces Vedic Braya. This is the first time, really, that we've seen this character. And he's, I mean, either one of these, Vedic Wynn, Vedic Braya, this is the first time that we've seen either one of them. And the differences between them are night and day. You know, Wynn comes in and she's got all the ceremonial garb on. It's all dark colored. She's got the headdress on. You can really just see her face versus Vedic Braya, who is in bright colors. His head's exposed. He's in a more tranquil, bright, idealized setting, you know.
Right.
And everything about him is saying how he's not a person who necessarily seeks power or popularity, which
much more casual, right, relaxed,
which, yeah, is supposed to lend you towards more liking him anyway, because, right, he's not seeking the throne. Basically, he's, right, just, he just happens to be the guy that's, you know.
Yeah, he
next
makes
up
a great little moment. He's like, when I first started here, I was just a gardener, and now the prophets have seen it that I might become
Kai.
Yeah.
But again, Louise Fletcher as Kai Wynn, Vedic Wynn, sorry, I got Kai in my brain. But as Vedic Wynn, I mean, she's so
just
insufferable.
Tell me that she becomes Kai.
No, I was thinking about Kai Opaka, and anyway,
right,
you know, now you're going to get me distracted again. I'm going to call him Kai Barial in a minute.
Right.
But her, I'm just, the differences between the two of them and the way that she just stood out to me so negatively.
Right.
And it's just been one of those things like, I remember the first time in watching it and realizing how much I loved hating her.
Right.
And this is before I'd ever heard that term of a character you love to hate,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And so just by the end of it, I was just like, I remember just being like, I can't stand her so much, but
right,
I kind of wanted to see her again. Because I just,
yeah,
I,
yeah,
you know, because Star Trek is always about, you know, this redemption of character, right?
Right?
People who start off evil, but then as you learn more about them, it's less that they're evil and more that they were desperate and confused.
Right.
So to have somebody that comes off as not just evil, but she's scheming, she's ruthless, she's plotting, she's manipulative, she's got Neela doing her dirty work, you know, I was in awe and I loved it. And it's just,
yeah,
like, I really hope to get more of that. And,
yeah,
you know, as you already know from your own research, we do.
Yeah.
Vedic Barai, on the other hand, I just don't like that guy. I don't like him. Not because he's done anything as a character. Like, he's not done anything. He's just so bland. Like,
right,
even when he was talking with Sisko, like, his whole delivery of his lines.
Yeah.
Where I guess they were going
super
for reverence.
Casual.
They were, yeah, he just came off as boring. He's like, yes, this is my arboretum.
Here's
and I come here to
hold, yeah,
I just want to grow bromeliads. I'm like, I don't even want to know what a bromeliad is, because if you're interested in it, it's got to be the most boring flower ever. I don't even want to know. You know, so yeah, just a lot of that here, and again, Louise Fletcher, I mean, she just delivers,
right?
And I loved it, and you know, her scenes with Sisko too, like even when they, you know, when they first met, when he goes to the temple, and she's in there, and there is something that she says to him about him not being a believer,
right?
And how she questioned him being the actual emissary, like. That was the roundabout,
yes,
gist of the conversation. She,
yes,
was like, well, I went to Kai Opaka and I talked to her.
Right.
And she kind of tried to shroud it in this whole, it was her shaken belief, but it was really more like, this guy sucks. Right. She,
yeah,
was, yeah, definitely digging at Sisko.
Right.
And I, you know, I have an affinity for Sisko. I don't like it.
Yeah.
I don't like when anybody kind of takes shots at the guy. So,
well,
yeah.
I like what she says. She's like, oh, we're going to miss Kai Opaka. She was great. And like, part of you thinks that she's like, you know, she's saying that, she means it, but it's like, well, I don't mind if she's gone now that I have a chance to get power for myself.
Right.
And she says that she has a great line. She says, people should not look into the eyes of their gods. And so it brings up the idea that, you know, maybe Sisko, because he doesn't believe in the prophets and gods, can understand them in a way that the Bajorans can't, which actually makes for an interesting, compelling argument within the world of Star Trek.
And in the world of the Bajoran religion, as to,
yes,
why they would need an emissary in the first place.
Right, yeah. Why do we need someone else to go on our behalf? But then, apparently, Kai Opaka told her to go sit in darkness for a while. And like, I was waiting for the line, like the punchline, being like, and then come out into like the light in like the middle of the day. Like, the idea being that when you're in darkness, like you come out in the light, and you're blinded by the light, so you can't handle it, or something like that. But that's not what the point of that was, I guess.
Well, she never really finishes. I mean, I could see you could draw that allegorical point, because, I mean,
right,
eventually if she sits in darkness, she's going to have to leave.
Right.
You know, so that could be the thing. I always interpreted it as because she, as again, Opaka told her, one should not look into the eyes of your own gods, and then,
right,
her immediate response back was, oh no, I would love to do it, and I would,
right,
be so happy to do it.
Right.
And then Opaka tells her, go sit in darkness. And to me, that was her kind of a way of telling her, you know, your eagerness is going to make you incapable of understanding the message that you would receive.
Right.
So it's just like, by sitting in darkness, this is, you know, basically a way of calming yourself down to recognize right. that you're not,
right.
you're not on that level,
right.
you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was just kind of my own little take from that. And again, you know, you can watch this all. I'm sure everybody can get right. their own from that. But again, just a lot of great, especially, yeah, no matter where you fall on the religious spectrum, I think there's a lot you can get from this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I also want to mention there's a scene really early on that I really loved in this episode. It was when O'Brien was talking with Neela, and he turned out to be a great boss. He goes to her, and she says, "Hey, have you fixed the thing yet?" She's like, "Done, finished." And he's like, "Did you do the thing?" And she's like, "Oh, yeah, definitely." And he's like, "Well, I'm just going to test it. You know, I just, you know, us old people have to feel useful." And he tests it, and he's like, "You did a great job. You're going to put me out of a job." I love that scene. I was like, O'Brien is really relatable. He's friendly. He's a great boss, like I'm saying. Like, he's able to, like, I know what I wanted done and how to do it, and I'm surprised and pleased by your success. And he doesn't, like, hold it against her. You could very easily turn into, like, the jealous type. He's like, "Oh, no, my job is in jeopardy." No, he's, like, relating to her. And then later on, when the two of them are trying to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, they're heart to heart. And she's telling him about how the Bajoran officers and the Starfleet officers are separate. He's like, "But you're not like that with me. Yeah. Why?"
Yeah, and you know, so it turns out that she's the one who's the assassin, effectively. It makes you feel really sad. She's like, this character could have really been, like, a great connecting point, like O'Brien. And there was also a little bit of sexual tension there when they're sitting there in that corridor. And they're like, "O'Brien, don't, you love Keiko, don't do anything stupid." And it's like, O'Brien doesn't have that thought at all. Like, he's just trying to figure out this mystery they're trying to solve, but...
And that was going to be the point where I was going to object, because I don't feel like there was ever sexual tension between the two of them. I think that it went from her distrusting him because he was a Federation officer
right.
to getting respect for him because, as she says, he doesn't put on airs, he talks to her, he works yes. with her. She says he's just nice. Like, in her opinion of others, he's nice.
Right.
The only time that we ever really see this implication of there being some kind of sexual tension is with Keiko.
Yeah.
And I feel like that was kind of a clumsy handling based on early 90s perceptions of people, you know, and again, like, there's a lot of behind the scenes stuff about the infamous influence of Rick Berman and his, this need for the male characters to be seen as desirable in some way. So,
right.
you know, there's a lot of that out there. I'm not going to do the whole deep dive into the legacy of Berman, because, as with anybody, there's a lot of great stuff that they give us, but then there's some duds, and there's some questionable decisions, and he is just as guilty.
Right.
The same can be said of, you know, the all-loving, all, you know, whatever, Gene Roddenberry, whatever you want to call him.
Right.
I mean, yes, he originated Star Trek, but the man had some definitely kooky, crazy ideas that, I mean, they never made it to film, but let's be honest, even if someone had pitched those today, he'd have been laughed out of the room. At least at this point when he was doing it, they kind of had to consider it, you know. But yeah, so, like, for example, the famous one is that when he created the character of Deanna Troi,
right.
she was supposed to be a triple-breasted alien.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
And then there was also the Ferengi and their, you know, endowment status was another of his fascinations.
Man.
So, again, lots of hits, but there are some misses.
I think the Ferengi found a way to slip it in there with the whole...
Umarks in the ears.
Yeah. And what's the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie where the three-breasted woman is actually in there briefly?
Total Recall.
There you go. It's like, I think we've already... I mean, I'm glad that you didn't do that, because that's just way off.
It would have ruined what...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if in the history of the show, it would have... Just,
it would have killed the show.
Yeah, the show would have missed its mark entirely. And,
yeah.
So yeah, like I'm saying, like, again, there's a lot of chaos that's out there that is like, thank God this never got greenlit, because the show would be completely different. And I thought this is one of those ones that kind of just like squeaked in under the wire,
right?
Because their overall relationship is very much more of a mentor mentee, in my opinion, anyway. You know, right. Brian never really seems to like hit on her, even be overly flirtatious. He's really kind of just is doing the job.
Right.
It's external people are making the insinuations.
Right.
And even Neela never really seems to,
you know. I would be very clear. There's nothing direct in that scene. It's just like, this is a moment where if the writers wanted to do something where they're going to throw that bombshell into the scene, they could, but it turns out the bombshell is that Neela is actually, she might seem sweet and lovely, but she's actually plotting murder and already has committed murder at that point.
And well, another...
She just looks all happy and nice, and she's pleased with her job, and she's pleased, and then, like, basically, Wynn corrupts this girl.
Yeah.
That's
the well, and another, you know, another behind-the-scenes thing, too, was that the actress who was supposed to play Neela, you know, they had actually wanted that to be more of a slow burn. So there had actually been a plan to introduce the character of Neela much earlier on,
really?
And showing her working on the station and getting to know people and, the you know, actually being a really part of it. And then her betrayal would have hit a little bit harder.
Oh, man.
But unfortunately, because of scheduling conflicts and there was something else that's going on with the actress herself. But they just really couldn't nail it down. So that's why we got what we got. But that was how it was originally supposed to be. It was like we were really going to see her for like the last maybe 8 to 10 episodes of the season. And then her blow up at the end. Yeah.
Talk about serialization, man.
Yeah.
That would have
so,
really started
which
that.
Again just shows like they were well on their way to that level of thinking, and they were just being shot down all the time, and then, you know, schedule conflicts being what they are, it's just,
right.
It's very hard to keep your idea going. You
right.
Know? So, before we wrap everything up here, because we've got like 4 minutes left, we have to ask the obligatory question. What was your standout scene? What is the moment for you that really kind of makes this episode?
I would say in general, this is a good episode. This is one of the better ones. Trying to think of one scene, I guess like the episode that really just kind of encapsulates, I mean, it just triggers everything is the one with Keiko and Wynn. She shows up and mm-hmm. says, "Why aren't you teaching the religious elements of the wormhole?"
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great scene because it really encapsulates the entire tension that this episode is going to address. I guess I'm just going to say that because there's not any one episode or one scene that like I think really stands out like as the one other than that. And it's also important because it's also two characters like Keiko we see occasionally. Like this is like maybe the third episode I think she's been on. But you know, Wynn's just here she is, and as you tell us now, like she's actually going to come back. So great moment in that sense. What would you say?
For me, it's definitely going to be the scene between the Siskos, Ben and Jake together, and you know, Sisko really kind of simplifying what's going on so that his son can understand it, but also he's presenting it in a way that he's not condescending, he's not talking down to his son, he's addressing his concerns, and he's also educating him as to, you know, why this is important.
Right.
And again, going back to the fact that he's talking about embracing a more open, multicultural mindset, you know, which again, in the 90s was incredibly important. And I think that, you know, as with a lot of Trek, it shows that this is a message that still resonates today.
Right.
There are people of various, you know, religious backgrounds and ideologies and political affiliations and all the rest of it out there. And whether you agree with them or not, you don't have a right to call them dumb or to dismiss them or to belittle them in any way. You just because they're different from you does not mean that you are superior. And I feel like this is a message that Star Trek has tried to nail many times in its history.
Right.
And I feel like this is really the first time, it is the first time that we've seen them do it with religion. You know, the differences of race has been one of the cornerstones of Star Trek since the original series in the 60s. That was a big deal to have a black woman on the bridge of the Enterprise along with an Asian man, a Russian man. You've got a Scottish man in your engine room. And then, of course, you've got our resident alien over here, too. So, again, that's been a part of Star Trek's DNA. So, to now move into a realm of let's talk less about the obvious physical differences that we can see and more into personalities, mindsets, cultures, why it's important to not just respect the person because they happen to look different, but also because they think different, you know? And also saying that, you know, you can educate yourself and change your perspective. But again, just because a person may be wrong in your view does not mean that you get to devalue them in any way. And that's that scene really just sums it up for me. I really, really like that.
Right.
And it's just one of those that if I could, I would make everybody watch it. Like, I don't care what else is going on. I'm like, yeah. Watch this right here. Because that, especially now, with right. everything that's out there, I feel like that's a message that's missing and needs to be
yeah.
talked about again.
Yeah. If there's one thing that like you we should tell the characters, like, you should have done this. It's just like, if like Keiko in particular had just said to Win, like, what's your concern about my not saying this? Like, do you accept my scientific terminology? Because I'm just using the scientific terminology. Again, that's part of what the scene is in a certain sense. If she had just said, I understand that you want to address that issue, I'm going to let you do that. You address right. that issue. No problem here. It's just like, I don't feel confident or I don't feel right in addressing that because I don't
have to I don't share your beliefs, right. I'm not a Bajoran who believes in the prophet's way that you do.
Right.
Right. Yeah. But there is still a fact here that no one could deny.
Right.
That wormhole is right there. Right. You can't say it doesn't
Latin
exist.
To describe right. species, therefore we can use that terminology to help us understand what we're talking about, but doesn't necessarily mean you have to throw out your religious beliefs as well.
Like, right.
I have to say, I'm missing Quark. Quark had like one line in this episode.
Yeah, he had one very brief. He was, instead of a bottle episode, we got a bottle scene.
Yeah. Odo says, hey, why haven't you, what have you heard about the murder of the one guy?
It's an Aquino.
Yeah. And Quark's like, how dare you insinuate I would know anything about murder. He's like, Odo's like, I'm not a bunch of murderers.
Yeah, he's like, I'm not a murderer. He's like, but you know a bunch of murderers.
He's like, and he's like, I'd sell one to you.
Yeah.
But none of them have anything I can give you, so. I was thinking about it. We'll address it more in our next episode, where for like season recap. But Quark has been kind of absent these last couple episodes.
Yeah, you know, and it's
it's like Armin Shimmerman was given all this great stuff in the first part of the season, and it was like, damn it, Armin, we can't give you any more good stuff.
It's almost like
someone else a chance,
right? It's like it's almost like they were trying to build the personality of the show, but now it's gotten to the point where it's like we have to really nail and establish our main cast.
Yes.
We are coming up on the end of the season, and there's a lot of things we just don't know. And right. it's not just about like other characters, but also about like the world in which we're trying to build, which another reason why this is a great episode, because we find out way more about the Bajorans and their religion and how important it is, and we kind of get inklings to how it works. You know, we know there's a power vacuum because Opaka's dead. We know that there's something called the Vedic Assembly, and that there's 112 other Vedics on the assembly, and that somehow out of all of this, Beryl is emerging as the favorite to become the next Kai. We also know that Vedic Win represents a small conservative order that no one really tends to listen to, but obviously this woman has political aspirations and ambitions, and she is going for it,
yeah.
you know? So, we can already see that this is not the last time that we are going to be dealing with this issue or seeing these characters right. and seeing how this plays out. So, definitely a lot to look forward to going forward.
Yeah.
So, that's about it for us on this episode. You will want to tune in next week, because next week we'll be doing our Season 1 recap.
Yeah.
And this will be just kind of going over highs and lows of the season and also just kind of taking our own pulse there. How do we feel about the show so far?
Do we think we'll be able to like try and answer any questions maybe?
Can find some and nail those down and the powers that be basically give me the access that I need for that, then yes. Otherwise, we'll just, I don't know, maybe we'll just make it up and say that someone asked.
Yeah. Just to be clear, everyone, by the time this episode comes out, we will have probably already recorded that final recap episode. So, of course, by the time you hear this, you won't be able to like ask anything in particular that we would be able to talk about by the time that episode comes out.
That's true.
But hopefully you've already been leaving us some feedback.
Yeah.
Find some good stuff to interact with. And
yeah, we
tell
will.
Tell you why you're wrong.
Yeah, tell you exactly. That's going to be my favorite part.
Right.
I love telling people why they're wrong. So, you can try and we'll see what we can come up with for the episode. But yeah, I think that'll be a lot of fun as we do that recap at the end of the month and get ourselves ready for season 2. And man, just right now thinking about season 2 and how it starts.
I've already looked ahead. Apparently the first 3 episodes of season 2 are a 3-parter.
Yeah.
Like, let's do it, baby. That's great.
We might have to break up our own broadcast into a 2-parter so that we have enough time to really delve into that
story. Are they literally like three, like the pilot was two basically episodes. They're like all together one big episode.
Yeah, so we're gonna have to.
Not like here's an episode and then it ties in nicely to the next episode.
This is it.
The 3-hour movie.
Yeah, basically.
Okay. All right. Wow.
So we will have to. We'll talk about it. We have time, right? We got like
maybe
at least
we'll
2-3 weeks.
Two-parter ourselves.
Maybe. Yeah, I was gonna say. That's what I'm saying. Maybe we have to do a 2-parter ourselves because I don't know if we'll be able to get it all in an hour. I mean, we already tend to go over anyway. But yeah. Well, all right, guys. Thanks again for listening to yet another episode of The Fire Caves, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. Again, you can find us anywhere that you listen to podcasts. I happen to be on Spotify. So join us. Leave us comments. Please be polite. And we will see you next time.
Thanks, guys.